Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday. It is the 5th of October, and very nice to have you with us. I hope you all enjoyed a beautiful autumnal weekend. A lot going on, of course, that took away our attention from other things, I guess. But we are back here to talk about a lot of it and try to make sense of it. If that is humanly possible, we will at least attempt and try. We welcome a great panel this morning, and I will introduce them in just a second. Before I do that, let me remind you that you can be a part of this program as well. Panel@wamc.org is our email address. All you have to do is type us a note and send it off, and we will get it. Panel@wamc.org. We obviously can't read everybody's notes, but we try to get to as many as we possibly can. So we hope you can be brief and to the point, and that would help us along very nicely. Let me introduce the group to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. It isn't as if we don't talk a lot. You and I talk over the weekend.
I know, but this is the only opportunity that people get to hear what we say to each other.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, it's really quite something. The president's behavior continues to confound. Going out in that car and subjecting other people in that confined space is just so typical of what we have come to expect from this guy, who now says he now understands what COVID is about. He didn't understand it because his brain wouldn't let him understand it up until now, until he got it. It's extraordinary.
We're going to talk about a lot of those issues this morning, of course. We also welcome to the panel UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies, Jennifer Burns. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Political consultant Libby Post. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe.
How are you? I'm well.
I'm good.
Good to hear your voice. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Speaking for most of the world, Sarah says, I'm hanging in there. We also welcome, he was with us on Friday and was just outstanding in helping us understand. Of course, we had just gotten the diagnosis early Friday morning, and we, Dr. Fagan joined us. Dr. Jim Fagan is an immunologist. His specialty is pediatric immunology, and he joins us this morning for a limited time. We only have him for about a half hour or so, but we're thrilled to have you back on the program, Doctor. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
Good morning, Joe.
All right, let's begin with you, sir, because I'm confused and I'm hoping you can help us. Here's what we know. There's been a lot of information and maybe even perhaps misinformation as far as the president. Alan mentioned the ride yesterday around Washington, which, you know, look, you can't blame the guy. He wants to get an ice cream, look at the foliage. I don't know. But
may as well kill three other people while you're at it.
Good Lord.
Yeah, really.
So, but that would indicate, and as all of the White House officials and the official news that we've gotten, even from his own doctors, have said he's doing very well. He may be released today. Everything is fine. Meanwhile, he's receiving, from at least my count, Doctor, three different treatments. And I am hoping you can give us a sense of these treatments and how they are used together and what we know about them. We know that the president was given an infusion of an experimental antibody cocktail that is being tested in COVID-19 patients. This is from the drug maker Regeneron. We also know that the president has received this steroid, which I do not exactly know how you pronounce, sir, so I will leave that to you.
Okay.
Is that dexamethasone?
Dexamethasone, that's correct.
Dexamethasone. So that is a steroid that is being used to treat this. And then, of course, there's the remdesivir?
Remdesivir.
Okay.
Right.
So those are the three that we know of, right? Now, what do we make of that? Because it would indicate, from what I'm reading, that would say that the patient, if you give those medicines to a patient, that patient is very ill and is in the middle stages and critical stages of COVID. Is that true? And what should we make from this trio of medications that the president is receiving?
Yeah, I think if you look at the brief history of remdesivir and certainly this new Regeneron cocktail, we don't have a lot of information about this, but certainly in terms of treating COVID-19 patients, there's no question that those medications, those therapeutic interventions were reserved for individuals who were severely ill, severe pneumonia, having respiratory distress. These are patients who obviously the doctors are very, very concerned about. Remdesivir is an antiviral medication. What it does is it inhibits RNA polymerase, which is basically means that it prevents the virus from replicating. And if a virus doesn't divide or replicate, it's not going to survive. Remember, a virus has to, it doesn't survive outside another cell. So it has to invade the human cells in order for it to survive and replicate. If it can't replicate, if it can't divide, it's not going to survive. So that's the purpose of the remdesivir. The antibody cocktail is brand new, and it's two monoclonal antibodies, and these are immunoglobulin molecules, antibodies that are directed specifically against the spike the spikes in the virus ultrastructure, and it's those spikes on the surface of the virus that are critical for the virus to be able to invade a host cell, a human cell. And again, if the virus cannot get into the human cell, if it can't invade, get in, it's not going to survive. So that's what the antibody cocktail is all about. And then the dexamethasone is a steroid, which we've been using for decades. And the purpose of a steroid is to reduce inflammation. Now, so certainly, if you look at the history of COVID-19, patients who received remdesivir and dexamethasone certainly were patients who were severely ill. Does that necessarily mean that Donald Trump is severely ill? No, it doesn't. You could intervene with these medications at any point in a clinical illness. And if you think about it, it sort of makes sense in a way to use these medications earlier on in the course of COVID-19 infection in order to prevent, the serious consequences of multi-organ infection. Like everything else in medicine, we always have to weigh the benefits versus the risk. When we're dealing with medications like remdesivir, and certainly the antibody cocktail, we may not know all of the risks. These medications are not authorized. They haven't been approved by the FDA. They're still, in clinical trial. And so there may be side effects, complications from these medications that we're not yet aware of. And you'd have to do all the necessary clinical trials, the phase 1, 2, and especially phase 3 clinical trials to determine all the possibility of side effects. But that doesn't mean that these medications are not going to be effective. So the fact that they were using these medications on President Trump at this stage of his illness, it's a medical decision. It doesn't necessarily mean that he is much worse than has been reported to us. There's absolutely no question that he's got lower respiratory disease. The COVID-19 is a coronavirus. It's a respiratory virus. And some individuals have nothing more than a cold symptoms. They get a runny nose, nasal congestion, cough, postnasal drip, and they get fever and headache and stuff like that. But not everyone who gets COVID-19 is going to get pneumonia. Clearly, Donald Trump has lower respiratory involvement because he dropped his oxygen saturation. You're not going to drop your oxygen saturation if you don't have lower respiratory involvement. No one drops their oxygen saturation when they have a head cold. And so the fact that his O2 sat dropped, means that, he's got lower respiratory disease. And so that may have been the indication for his physicians to think about using medications that that would have otherwise been reserved for patients who had more severe infection. Again, if you think about it, makes sense to use these medications to prevent severe infection rather than in a desperate attempt to treat someone who is critically ill.
So when you look at the information that we're getting, and I guess all of what you said I understand now, and I thank you, but it all depends on what we're being told about the president's condition. And that's where the question marks come in, right? Is we did not learn about the drops in the oxygen until Sunday because his own physicians did not mention it and walked around it on Saturday.
Right. Well, I think the lack of transparency here is obvious to all of us and is fairly egregious. I mean, I think that the American public has the right to know what the health status is of the President of the United States. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why his physicians would not be open and honest unless they were directed by their patient not to do so.
And that was my final question, then I'll promise I'll open up to everybody else. But that was, how much does the patient have in this, especially when the patient is the president of the United States? So if all of the doctors are in the room saying, sir, you really shouldn't leave the room, you really shouldn't leave the room, and he's saying, I want to go get in a car, or I want to be discharged today or tomorrow, how much of that is on the patient and how much of it is out of the hands of the physicians?
Well, ultimately, the patient should have the final decision. However, you know, we're dealing with a highly contagious infection. And for Donald Trump to get into a car with two other individuals and drive around the block is about the most egregious thing I could imagine. I mean, I don't know what gear those individuals in his car were wearing. Hopefully they were wearing N95 masks, but they certainly weren't, you know, wearing shields. They were absolutely at tremendous risk of contracting this virus, given the close contact that they had. There's no question that Donald Trump is shedding the virus. He's still ill with this, and he's absolutely shedding the virus. He obviously was wearing a mask. But, I mean, for a patient with active COVID-19 who's shedding the virus to knowingly, willingly get into a car with other individuals, I don't know what to say about that.
Alan, is Alan there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
The guy next door was using his lawnmower, so I turned it down.
Gotcha.
Naturally. Word goes out. Shot Talk's using is on the air. Let's all turn on our lawnmowers. Anyway, no, that's not true. So the question then is, what about medical ethics here? His doctor comes out and he purposely obfuscates. Is that unethical?
I think it is unethical, Alan. I think that what he could have said is, I cannot give you all the information that you're asking about because the patient has directed me to give you know, just a certain amount of information. I mean, Donald Trump, there are HIPAA regulations, and the question, do they apply to the President of the United States? Does the President of the United States have the right to not to disclose medical information? But for his physician to stand out there, you know, in public, and intentionally, knowingly mislead individuals, mislead the public, I think that is unethical. I do. I mean, he could have said, I'm limited in terms of what I'm allowed to say.
Right. Or just, I mean, that's a good no comment, right? If you don't want to say it, you just say no comment.
Yeah, or no comment. Yeah, and I guess we would interpret it that way.
Right. Does anyone else in the panel have a question for a doctor before the break?
Well, let me ask another one.
Yes.
Is he in trouble? Is he in trouble? I mean, how much is your assessment now that the president of the United States, who's facing an election in 28 days or something like that, has to, and where people are already voting, and where he's scared to death he's going to lose because he's behind in all the polls, is he really sick?
Well, it's hard for me to answer that question, Alan, because I would have to examine him. But, you know, again, he certainly has some major risk factors, his age, his obesity, his probably a number of other features that would certainly make him at risk for COVID-19. How sick is he right now? I don't know.
Big question.
Part of the problem, Doctor, is that we don't know the timeline, right? I mean, a lot of people, when we were talking to you on Friday, we were saying, okay, well, if the president was tested on Thursday and the test came in early Friday morning, and then we go back of what we normally know, that those, you know, say 5 days in is really of great concern. That would be where we are now, but we don't know for sure if that is A, when he was tested, and B, when he started to show symptoms. We are finding out much more that apparently, we have no way of knowing for sure, but most likely the event that many of the people who have tested positive seem to have come down during the Saturday ceremony for Amy Coney Barrett.
Well, you know, he did develop symptoms very quickly after that. Which would suggest that he became positive a few days before that. Now, nothing is impossible, you know, especially with infectious disease. But most people who develop COVID-19, they will, develop symptoms slowly over the course of a couple of days, and then things sort of take off after that. The fact that he had lower respiratory involvement on Friday, it would be unusual if he first became positive the evening before that, and that would be a very rapid course.
I'm going to pause you there, Doctor, because we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we'll get many more questions. We have a lot of listener questions as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jennifer Burns, Libby Post, and Sarah Rogerson, plus our special guests for the next few moments. We'll have Dr. Jeff Fagan with us, who is an immunologist and has been helping us over the past couple days make sense of the medical aspect of the story of the president testing positive for coronavirus and COVID-19. Doctor, I'm curious in one way here too of with the you were talking about the ethics with Alan, which is obviously very important. But then after that press conference on Saturday, it was a weird day because the doctors came out. They said everything is great. They hedged the question about the oxygen. They went around and then weirdly the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, goes over to the press and says, yeah, it's really bad, and it's you know, things are horrible, and we don't know what the next couple of days are going to bring. And even the president alluded to that in one of his messages that he released via Twitter on Saturday that we'll see over the next couple of days. And now we're hearing the reports that he's expected to be released today. He wanted to be released yesterday, and it is we assume maybe going to get out today. I already asked you the question about how much of that is up to the patient, but I am curious about just the indications of what that tells us of getting a sense. Once, if he goes back to the White House, and I know the White House, and I've read quite a bit about this, of what the White House has on hand as far as a medical suite and so forth, but isn't still the best place for someone who is ill, even that ill, would be at a hospital?
Well, it depends on how ill he really is. He's not in severe respiratory distress. He would not have been able to go out and leave the hospital and jump into a car and drive around the block several times. So we know he's ambulating. He's not. He doesn't have an oxygen requirement. So, I mean, that would suggest that at the present moment, he's not severely ill. But the whole problem with this virus is what's going to happen 2, 3, 4, or 5 days from now. You know, one of the issues is the inflammatory response to this infection, the immune response to this infection, which can really take off like a rocket. And that can happen after 7 to 10 days of being sick. And so, I mean, that's still a major concern in terms of, you know, what's going to happen a few days from now. The fact that, you know, it was interesting that they put him on dexamethasone so early, because dexamethasone is an anti-inflammatory medication. It's going to reduce the inflammation in his airways. The other thing you have to always keep in mind is that inflammation is a host defense mechanism. Inflammation, the reason that we become inflamed is because it's the immune system's attempt to keep an infection isolated and prevent the expansion of an infection. And it does that through all the inflammatory cells, the white blood cells that sort of move into the area and set up shop. And so inflammation actually is a major host defense mechanism. Now, what you do with dexamethasone is you reduce that inflammation. Of course, he was also given at the same time, you know, that antibody cocktail and remdesivir. And so they probably felt that they were knocking off the virus with remdesivir and with the antibody cocktail, and now they're going to perhaps take care of any inflammation that might set in through the dexamethasone. I would imagine that was the rationale for that. So only time will tell. I mean, if he has no oxygen requirement and his vital signs are stable, there's no reason why he can't be discharged from Walter Reed and go back to the White House. Of course, you have to remember that the distance from the White House to Walter Reed, I mean, he probably could be back there in a few minutes if he had to.
7 minutes with a motorcade, yeah.
Yeah, and
you can make good time. Yeah,
yeah. So it's not like he is not going to have that acute care available to him. He obviously will have that at all times. So, but I think that, you know, if they're ready to discharge him, it would certainly suggest that he is at least at the present time, stable, not having any major respiratory problems, and they're going to have to watch him carefully, though. Everyone's response to this virus is different, and it's impossible to predict in advance how one individual is going to respond. Again, he does have, you know, some comorbid risk factors, and they're going to have to, you know, take care of that. I think that, again, as I mentioned before, normally if someone said to me, a patient who was diagnosed with COVID-19 was treated with remdesivir and an antibody cocktail and dexamethasone, that patient is significantly sick. But again, that may not have been the case. They may have done this, you know, in a sort of prophylactic vein to try to prevent the onset of some severe symptoms. You know, then you have to, again, you have to look at the benefits, you have to look at the risks, and, you know, you also have to look at the cost of some of these medications, because it may not be, applicable to the general public.
So, Jim, let me ask you this. You're a doctor. You know, I want you to try, and it's almost impossible, but try to take us into the conversation that the doctors at Walter Reed were having when he came in. One possibility, as you may have been suggesting, is they decide, okay, we don't want to be the last man out here. We're treating the president of the United States. Let's throw everything we got in our arsenal at him. You know, let's just give him everything we got. Or maybe he said to them, hey, whatever you got, I want it. I want it now. Could you take us into what that conversation may have looked like?
Uh, I, I would hope that this was more of a medical decision than a patient decision. I would really, really hope that he did not receive these therapeutic interventions because he insisted on getting these therapeutic interventions. I would hope that this was a medical decision made on the basis of a number of factors, including his age and comorbidities, and not the least of which is the fact that he's president of the United States. No holes are barred in this, in treating him. Now, again, if you look, it's always benefits versus risk, Alan. If you look at what are the risks of something like remdesivir? Well, it's really not a terribly dangerous medication. I mean, patient common reactions are some GI stuff like nausea, constipation. You can get a little bit of liver enzyme elevation, but it's nothing. I mean, the serious reactions from remdesivir would be the same reactions you get from almost any medication. The possibility of a hypersensitivity or allergic reaction, which can include anaphylaxis, which can be life-threatening. And then, it does affect liver enzymes, so it does, impact on liver function. But those are pretty mild in terms of, side effects. Actually, the dexamethasone, if you look at side effects of a steroid drug like dexamethasone, there are actually more side effects to that. So I think that, I would hope that, his physicians got together and said, what are our options? What's available to us? What do we think we should do? And I think my own feeling is if they're talking about sending him home tomorrow, that the therapeutic intervention that Donald Trump had was an attempt to ward off what might have been more serious consequences of this infection rather than to treat symptoms that were prevailing at the time. So, but we'll have to wait and see. I mean, certainly someone who was critically ill with COVID-19, they would never have been even thought of discharging him, today or tomorrow. I mean, that's for sure. So, I think that, again, looking at, the big picture, I think that he was given these medications in a preventive mode rather than treating a condition that he already developed.
We have a few questions for you, Doctor, and before you go, I'd just like to rattle through as many as I can from listeners. A lot of people want to know, tap into your expertise. Kyle says, to the best of your knowledge, Doctor, how long will antibodies for the coronavirus stay in our bodies and will show on an antibody test?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and the honest answer is we don't know for sure how long natural antibodies that we synthesize against this virus will last. I mean, we've had lots of experience with viral infection, including a lot of other coronaviruses, and the likelihood, and I say likelihood, I don't know this for a fact, the likelihood is that if you got COVID-19 and you developed an antibody response to COVID-19, in all likelihood, you probably would have long-lasting antibodies. And it's not just the antibodies. It's what's going on underneath. The antibodies are the tip of the iceberg. It's the cell-mediated immune response, the recognition of this virus by lymphocytes like B cells and T cells, which are going to immediately respond if the patient saw that infection again. So the likelihood, and again, we don't know for sure because this is a novel virus, and we have to wait and see. But I would say that the likelihood is that the natural forming antibodies would be very long lasting. It could be lifelong. I mean, we certainly have antibodies to infections, things like measles and mumps and rubella, things that will last for the life. And in terms of the antibodies that he received, because remember that antibody cocktail he received from the Regeneron product, that's only going to last for a few weeks. Because, that's antibody that he did not synthesize. That's antibody that came from other individuals that was modified, so that, what they do when they make these monoclonal antibodies, they make it so that the antibody recognition is specific against a certain part of the virus. So it's very exact, and it binds to, you know, some of the spikes in this virus and prevents the virus from getting into human cells. But that will only last for a few weeks. And the other question is, could that dampen down his own immune response? His natural immune response, you know, and again, it's something that, as an immunologist, I would, you know, think about, you know, and be a little bit concerned about.
Two more questions, and then I promise I'll let you go. Kate writes and says, what instructions would be given to a patient discharged following a mild case of COVID with respect to advised behavior, limitations on activity, et cetera? If Trump is discharged today and ramps up his activity level over the next few days, what ramifications might there be for his continued recovery?
Oh, it would have serious ramifications. I mean, first of all, you know, he needs to be isolated for at least 10 days, you know, 10 days from the start of symptoms. And that's because he's highly, highly, highly contagious. You know, this COVID-19 is a systemic infection. I mean, it isn't just in your nose, your throat, or in your airways. It's a systemic infection. In fact, the pneumonia that you get from COVID-19, you know, how does that virus get from your nose and throat to your lungs? It's probably not through the respiratory. So it probably doesn't travel down. It gets into the bloodstream. It gets into the bloodstream, and that's how you get pneumonia. And then if it's in the bloodstream, it can infect any organ in the body. And so he's got to really take it slow. I mean, there's no possible way he's going to be out on the street or at campaign rallies or anything else in the next week or two. I couldn't imagine that. First of all, he must be isolated for 10 days. I mean, if they let him out of the White House, I mean, that would be more than egregious. I mean, it would be malpractice if you were a doctor directing that. It was just, you can't possibly even consider that.
And Joe, if I could really quickly, what about, we have one letter asking about the potential for psychiatric damage here. In other words, you've been around, you know, you've been treating patients, Jim.
So,
go ahead, please.
There's, you know, COVID-19 can infect the central nervous system. We know that. But in terms of, you know, what's been discussed about psychiatric issues, you know, the dexamethasone can be associated with, it does have side effects, including a common side effect would be emotional lability. But a more serious side effect would be a steroid psychosis, which anyone can get. And again, like so many other things, there's no way to predict that. But steroid psychosis is a known side effect of dexamethasone. Does Donald Trump have that? Who knows?
We got a letter from a woman whose husband had end stage lung cancer and was put on that drug and was asking that question because she said her sweet husband turned into someone almost polar opposite, and she was wondering of how, you know, how long that lasts and what the impact could be.
Right. So it is possible that that her husband may have suffered from the steroid psychosis side effect of dexamethasone.
Yeah.
Sorry. One last question here, Jim. Is it possible he'll get any better because of this medication?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't mean better, and I don't mean better altogether. I mean that the psychology of Donald Trump would get any better. It was a wise guy question. I'm sorry.
Are you kidding? No, I don't think so, Alice. I mean, he will.
It's
there's a very good chance that these medications will have a positive effect on the virus. Will it have a sustained, lasting effect on other things, personality or higher integrative functions? I don't think so.
I don't know. Yesterday, he said he did say that now he understood about what this is all about.
Yeah, right.
Extraordinary.
Dr. James Fagan is an immunology and allergy specialist. He is our guest, and we thank you very much for being with us, sir. A great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you.
Thanks for inviting me, Joe.
Be well. Thank you. We have a wonderful panel here remaining. Jennifer Burns, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, and, of course, Alan Chartok. We'll get back to everybody right after this short break. Welcome back, Alan Chartok, Jennifer Burns, Libby Post, and Sarah Rogerson on the panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So with that and some medical information under our belts, we'll go around the room here to the panel and get some overall thoughts. Libby, you want to start us off?
Okay. You know, Alan's last question, I think, was actually the most prescient. Will this have an impact on him at all? Will he become a little more human? And I tend to doubt it. I mean, going out yesterday, if that truly was him in the car, and we all know there were body doubles and all that sort of stuff, you know, so who knows if that was really him in the car or not.
Okay.
But if it was him in the car, in a closed environment without a mask on, with the people driving, he just put more people at risk, which clearly shows he's only in it, as we've all known, for himself without any regard to anyone else's health or well-being. And, you know, it was a stupid stunt. It really was. It was just a stupid stunt. And, you know, I think the majority of thinking people see it for what it is. You know, Sienna, I just got an email before we started chatting. Sienna has Biden up 49-41 across the country. You know, I think people are getting a little sick of this. I saw some news reports where staunch Trump supporters were given pause by the fact, oh my God, this isn't a hoax. So what are all those people now going to say? How are they going to face their kids and grandchildren and neighbors and say, oh, well, yeah, I guess it is real? I mean, come on. You know, he's just perpetuating the worst behavior. That's all.
Sarah Rogerson.
Well, I find it deeply refreshing to hear from an actual medical professional with some scientific background. I mean, the weekend commentary was just all over the place. And, you know, I think we need to remember to always go back to the experts, even though, and I would not put the president in that category. I would, however, include people who have read the books and stuff, as he mentioned last night, that's a different kind of learning. But it's the kind of learning that brings the truth out. So I appreciate that type of learning, and not just because I'm a professor. So it's really helpful to have medical professionals weigh in. There are tons of theories that can spin out there, but the thing that struck home for me the most was just the degree to which we have the faith in our institutions has eroded to the point where we don't know what to believe anymore. And maybe that's why I find such comfort in listening to a medical professional, is that there are some truths. There is reality. And Trump and his people have done a great job of distorting that. But when you're talking about a pandemic, the truth will always come around to bite you. And it's not a coincidence that it's the people who are the bad actors, largely Republicans, who have ultimately found themselves in closer contact with this disease. And I hope that it does bring about a sort of kind of learning. Obviously, I hope everybody's health improves, and that anyone who's dealing with this recovers. But I do hope that the learning is part of the takeaway.
Jennifer Burns.
One, I keep thinking about how we really don't know. I mean, right from the start with President Trump, remember there was the debates about his medical conditions to begin with, right? The doctors, or his doctor, wasn't really releasing how healthy he was. Remember, there was all that secrecy about his health from the start. So I chalk what's going on now up to that same pattern of behavior, right? We're never going to get the truth about what's going on health-wise with the president, regardless if he has COVID or not. Right? I mean, that's from the start. The next thing about this is, I think the Republicans are really going to use this to spin in their direction. Like, they're down in the polls now, but depending on how the outcome goes, right, there are people who are appalled kind of by how he's handled this. But as he gets better, right? Or he begins to beat it. The conversation isn't going to be about how it was a hoax. It's going to be, look, it's not so bad. You know, the president is better. It's really this small thing. It, you know, don't worry about it so much. And they're going to say, look, he handled it. And see, those Democrats are just trying to scare you with how deadly this was. It's not that bad. And they're going to play it up. And some of the pollsters who don't like how he handled it so far in the Republican camp are going to go right back to his side about it. And I find that really, really scary, because the third thing that I'm also concerned with is not just his health, but how the contact tracing is going with people connected to Hope Hicks and Kellyanne Conway and all of the people that were there Saturday during his nomination and since then, and where they went out in public, right? Not just with each other, but out in public. Who's tracking that, and who's, you know, letting everyday Americans know?
Well, from
what they may have been in contact.
From what we know, no one is doing that.
And that's, people should be paying attention to that.
Yeah.
Because this is not contained in the White House.
Yeah, that's the most deeply.
Go ahead, sir.
That's the most deeply problematic. That's the most deeply problematic issue. I mean, we do that at all the learning institutions here locally. You read it about it, you read about it in the paper. That is the way that we can contain this disease from entire communities. That's how we've kept Albany Law School up and running. That's how a lot of higher education and, quite frankly, primary schools, the K-12 system, that's how you do it. You have to do contact tracing and daily screening, and that's not happening. It's happening locally, right, and it's highly effective. But how could this not be pro forma at the White House? If I have to go and have my temperature taken in order to renew my dog license, why don't I have to get my temperature taken to go into the Oval Office?
That's true. That's absolutely true.
And if you dismiss all of that, Alan, and which yeah. the White House seems to be doing, I mean, it goes back to where they've been all along as far as just close your eyes and it'll go away.
Well, we do have the president saying that now that he's had it, he understands it. But when 209,000 people now are dead because of his inaction, that was different. But now he understands it, because if you've got it yourself, that's different than if you just examine the science and do what you need to do. So it's, you know, I know that a lot of people are nervous that this whole thing is going to help them. But I don't think so.
I think people are.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Libby.
Me neither. I agree with you, Alan. I do not think this is going to help him at all.
But why do you think that, Alan? Go on.
Well, and Libby, I think that people are just disgusted with him and understand that he's a phony and that he has been not protecting them and the American people the way they are. And they're going to be really angry, ticked off, for want of a better word. I think that the refusal of the polls to shift an iota towards Trump in the quick and dirties that have been done show you that it's not going that way. It's going the other way. I think people say, okay, enough of you. You've messed up everything. And you think about this, you know, that they've gone after the Republicans who are all at this. I'm going to say something which will get me into big trouble. But the Republicans who are all at the, you know, the honoring of the Supreme Court pick, Cooney. Never mind. I'm not going to say it, but, you know.
All right.
Well, we're
all thinking it. Well, we'll read between the lines. That'll be our little fun game between the news break. When we come back, we will we have many letters from listeners, and we want to get to those. We have a legal question for Sarah. We have a couple questions for Alan. Somebody agrees with Libby. So we got all kinds of stuff to talk about, and we'll do all of that after this news break with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jennifer Burns, Libby Post, and Sarah Rogerson making up our panel this morning. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org. And a lot of folks have taken us up on that offer. We have a ton of letters, and I'll try to get to as many as we possibly can while hopefully getting to some other issues as well. This one is for Sarah from Yasmin, who says, if those who were in the car with President Trump on his Walter Reed joyride get sick, do they or their families have any legal recourse?
So likely not, for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, we really have to be careful about when we talk about criminalizing the exposing other people to a disease. That, if we remember out of this current political moment and back to the AIDS crisis, right? That type of a law could be used to punish entire groups of people, not for political reasons, but for reasons that are being, and I'm not saying that that's what this this caller is asking about, right, or this listener is asking, but we have to remember that time and how different diseases have impacted different groups in different ways. And so we really have to be careful about how we talk about that. The other thing is that the people that likely were chaperoning our president were people who have signed up to take a bullet for him.
Right. That's
have
their
they
job.
Signed up to do that whenever he wants them to? No. It's not, you know, he can't say, you know, I really need a boost in the polls. Could you guys take a bullet for me so that we can have a great story, right? Which is like the functional equivalent of what he did. But they did sign up for the job. That being said, you know, it raises a great point about liability generally and the federal government and the lack of action and whether years from now we'll see any sort of legal recourse or reparations or anything to make up for the fact that this was preventable. And the federal government and the president in particular, and as an individual, failed to act. I'm sure it's one of many humanitarian violations, actually, that may be lodged against this administration, but we just won't know the outcome of 4 years.
This letter writer Carrie agrees with Alan. They lie all the time. You'll never convince me that all this isn't just another publicity stunt by Trump to divert attention away from his disastrous debate performance. Why should we believe anything coming from this White House or the physicians under Trump's control? Well, Alan, that's the problem when you lie a lot, right?
Mm-hmm. You lie a lot, and people think you're lying all the time. It is the little boy or girl who cried wolf syndrome.
Yeah. And that is hard. This said, agreeing with Libby, Republicans always need to experience something personally, and if they don't, it isn't real. This is true with unemployment,
right,
access to health care, abortion, poverty, or even abortion.
Well, if it's abortion, I can guarantee you their kid is going to get an abortion one way or the other,
right,
while they hypocritically refuse to let other women make their own decisions.
Libby?
Well, I agree with what Alan said. I mean, you know, you have all of these anti-choice legislators who knock up their girlfriends and force them to have abortions.
Gee, how could the line have gone dead? There you go. Go ahead. Go ahead, Libby. It's back.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm on the app.
Okay.
So it's
some guys.
Cut her off. Yeah, it happens time and time again that happens. And it's just, you know, unless it happens to them, it's not real, because this president has brought out the most venal self-centeredness of people. That I don't care about anyone else. And it really is true. I mean, some of these folks do not care about anyone else except themselves, and this is why they're doing it. The Boston Globe just had a headline saying that even with Trump's illness, his staunchest supporters are still skeptical. How stupid can you be?
Skeptical of COVID-19.
Of COVID-19 and wearing masks and social distancing and all the rest of it. It's like, how stupid can you be? That's my question.
Let's go to Kevin, who says Amy Coney Barrett should withdraw from the nomination. Her judgment about exposure, she exposing herself to COVID again and allowing her children to be exposed by the crowd, was bad. And the president of Notre Dame should resign for similar reasons. Sarah, this gets sort of into what you were saying just a few moments ago.
Yeah, and I really don't want to get into judging people's parenting. We don't know what she knew or didn't know on that day. I think what's more troubling is the more recent news reports about things that she's signed on to, about restricting abortion rights and some of her far right-wing views. That's way more troubling to me than what happened at Notre Dame, although it is deeply problematic, right? And it just goes to show you, like, if and we also, just another aside, have to remember that Amy Coney Barrett also tested positive over the summer. So she likely has antibodies, and we don't know the details of whether or not her whole family had it or not. So just being careful and being mindful of what narratives we're latching on to in order to sort of further our angst about anything that the president does. There's a lot of conversation this weekend about, like, whether or not it makes sense for us to continue to go high. And I hold on to hope that there is. And I actually think it's the line that we have to hold on to, because when the power dynamic shifts, then we have the opportunity to lead in a more positive, science-based way.
Referencing Michelle Obama's 2016 creed to when they go low, you go high. Virginia writes to us and says, okay, Democrats, wake up and smell the zinnias. If Trump is weakened or does not survive, we get extreme hardliner Pence. And if Trump gets well, he will brag that he was right all along. COVID-19 is not serious. It's all a loser for the Democrats. Alan.
Is not ridiculous. Sorry, I don't mean to put down any letter writer. We love them all. But, you know, but it is not. The Democrats are showing real strength here. The polls are showing real strength. You know, people are sick to death of this guy and his lies. You know, CNN did a thing this morning, I think it was CNN, that was just brilliant. They showed all the times that Trump was making fun of Hillary Clinton and everybody else for whatever perceived diseases they had at that moment. What a what word can you use?
Not a nice person. Yeah.
A schnorrer.
Yeah, what a schnorrer is okay. Schnorrer is okay. Yeah. You don't want to use the other S word, which is what
You and I know what that means, so it's okay.
Jennifer, what do you make of that, of what this means for the Democrats?
I'm in the camp here with this letter writer. We may see through this, but we know there's a lot of people out there who are really willing to go with Trump's promises and lies. And when he gets well and he gets back out there, right? I mean, this is right now. People are fickle. We know this. People are fickle, right? So he gets back out there, and within 2 weeks or 3 weeks, the Republican chant might really be, see, it's not that bad. You can beat it. He beat it. It's fine. The Democrats are, you know, making this worse than it is. And I think it's going to be part of their campaign strategy if he gets well. And the other thing about, you know, Republicans not always, you know, that they, until it happens to them, they don't really get it. In this situation, it's happening to Trump, but not really. He's getting the finest health care right up front, immediately. So he's not really experiencing the hardship of an everyday, ordinary person who gets COVID. And so his view of how he treats it and how the Republicans after the spin it are going to be on that preferential special treatment that he received, not on the reality for everyone else.
But don't people, Jennifer, don't people have the sense that, you know, I wouldn't be getting this treatment, and that it's just, you know, it's just not, it's just for some people at the top. I mean, that's a big part of the Trump base, if you think about it.
But he still will beat it. And we know that people do not see through everything. They're believing him on his promises, his executive order that he's signed for pre-existing conditions for the Affordable, you know, Health Care Act. They're believing all of his stuff. He's been running with lies and promises for 3 years.
All true.
And they're still believing him.
All true. On the other hand, he ain't leading in the polls.
Right. Today.
No.
I don't think it's going to change, with all due respect. The man has an approval rating that's hovering around 40, 41, and no president ever got elected, reelected with an approval rating that low. It's just not going to happen. Unless they steal it. I mean, and that's possible.
Right.
But that's the only way they can win.
But I fully understand what Jennifer's saying. There are an awful lot of people who are worried about, the way that he pulled it off the last time. And when they didn't think it was going to happen this time, when I'm telling you he's going to get beat and beat bad, those people who were once not worried about him are very worried about him. I get that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what else I think we should pay attention to is this is based really on who we know right now, the positive cases out of the White House. But there very well could be many more in the next coming days and weeks.
Absolutely.
And that's going to affect all of this tremendously as well.
No, that's right.
Yes. Let us go to, let me ask you, panel, before we go back to the letters, but there is a growing debate, if you will, and I use the term somewhat loosely, but there is the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, is going ahead with campaigning. And so he is said to be, I think, going to Ohio today, I believe Ohio, for an event. And so if he was in contact, and we, according to the White House, he was last in contact with the president on Tuesday. So if he was last in contact with the president on Tuesday, that would mean you would quarantine for 14 days. So he is going ahead and doing his events. Meanwhile, people are saying, well, Joe Biden was on a debate stage with the president on Tuesday. Yes, he was 12 feet away. Yes, he has tested negative for the past three tests, as has the vice president, Pence. But should he be going out on the trail as he is expected to do today?
Well, damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, right, Joe? If you think about this, if he doesn't go out, people are going to say scaredy cat, he doesn't
right.
do what he's supposed to be doing, he's not aggressive enough. And if he does go out, they're going to yell at him that he's endangering himself and other people. It's a tough one.
Let's see. We got a weird letter, and I only say weird because I don't remember anybody saying this. Your panelist today suggested that in Trump's photo op around Walter Reed, he was not wearing a face mask and excoriated him. I don't think we did that.
No, he was wearing a mask.
He was wearing a mask. Yeah. So if that was
Whoever that was.
Yeah, I didn't get that conspiracy theory, Libby. It looked like him to me. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it probably was, but you just never know. And the fact of the matter is, if it was him, which I'm sure it was,
okay.
No, it was him, because if it wasn't him, it would get out. It would get out,
yeah.
And that would
if
be
it. If it was, the fact of the matter is that he put the people in the car with him at risk.
Yeah.
It shows he has absolutely no concern for anybody else. And yes, these guys are supposed to take a bullet for him, but that's a different dynamic than intentionally getting in a car with someone with a communicable disease.
Let's go to another letter, this one on Amy Coney Barrett again, and that Sam writes, as Amy Coney Barrett has been nominated to use her judgment on constitutional issues, what are we to think of her judgment by attending and being the focus of a large-scale mm-hmm. White House event while unmasked during a pandemic? This, I think, goes back to Sarah's point of, well, what did she know she was getting herself into?
Yeah, I do. The point is completely valid in terms of why not wear a mask. Although there was a report that came out, I think last night, that said that if you did show up at the White House with a mask, the president would boss mm-hmm. you into taking it off.
Sure, that's true.
That's his policy. The policy is the opposite of proper COVID protocols. Is that he actively, dissuades people from being careful in his presence. And I guess she had to weigh the benefit and the risk of not getting the seat at all because of a face mask dispute, And when you're faced with that kind of decision, I'm not saying she exercised the judgment I hope I would have, but I'm not in the hot seat. It's very difficult to know until you're in the face of someone like Donald Trump. Very.
Well, yeah, and I will add, I mean, you know, part of what's been going on for all the White House events, they claim, not saying it's true, but they claim that people are, you know, they have their temperature taken when they come in. There's been tests done on, you know, the senators and everybody going throughout the process. So if she were to base her decision on that and got there and had to take her temperature and everything else, she may have thought that, you know, it was a safe environment.
And she's had the disease. And she had it herself. Yeah.
Right. So, you know.
Well. With that, let's go to, we just have a few more minutes before we go back to, we have a break and then we'll come back for more discussion. We go to Joel, who says, we may never find out the truth about Trump's condition or not for a long time. Why? Walter Reed is a military hospital. The doctors are all in the military. Trump is the commander in chief. He gives the orders, they obey.
That's not entirely true, by the way, Joe. There are attendings who are not in the military, who have been public about their comments.
Right.
So, you know, you can make that case, but I don't think it's right.
Mike says, from what we know about how this disease progresses, it certainly seems that Trump was positive for much longer than we are being told. We go to John, who says that COVID-19 can cause neurological and psychiatric damage. President Trump is in charge of the nuclear codes. I am very concerned.
Yeah. Right.
Let's see. Nancy says, I'm wondering what protective equipment is being supplied to all of the staff and service workers attending to the president and first lady. Let us not offer more opportunity for spreading the virus to families of all these workers. We go.
Let me go back to the last one about the nuclear code.
Yeah.
I have a question for everybody. Do you think that Donald Trump, in his present, you know, psychiatric modality, whatever it is, would risk a nuclear war to get reelected?
These are the kind of questions you ask on a long car trip. Like, would you rather?
And didn't he already do that very early on in his presidency? I mean, things got real dicey with North Korea there for a bit, to the point where, like, you know, the New York Times was like calculating the outside trajectory of long range nuclear missiles. So I don't know. I feel like that's just what he does. He doesn't care.
I think it's all scary.
My own answer to the question is damn right he would.
Edward asks us, has anyone heard anything about Melania's condition? I believe the only reports that have come out have been from the president himself, who says that she has very mild symptoms and is doing very, very well. But has anyone heard?
Well, I think they're trying to keep that all really quiet because, you know, they don't want to bring her name up because last week she was also associated with, you know, talking about immigrant children and, you know, all these recordings that came out. So I think they're trying to keep that quiet and, you know, deflect and distract people away from even talking about her.
Hmm. They are saying that she has no plans to leave the White House. This is from, I believe this is from CNN. She has no plans to leave the White House while she convalesces at the executive residence after contracting COVID-19 and will remain there for the foreseeable future. So, well, that is what we know. I hope that answers the listener's question. We have a minute or so before we go over, and we go to, let's see, did I get them all? Maybe I got them all. Linda says, one thing I've been wondering about is what meds he's taking on a daily basis is an aspirin, or one of the meds that he's taking on a daily basis is an aspirin, per the list released by his doctors. Why? What does that perhaps mean? A daily aspirin is not taken casually because of the potential for stomach bleeding problems. As I understand it, the daily aspirin is usually prescribed to reduce the risk of cardiac and stroke problems. Does anyone know if that is the case, and what does the panel think about that? Brings to mind the strange trip to Walter Reed last year.
I take one.
Case. Yeah.
It is, and I take one.
Yeah. It is the case. I take Xarelto because of I have a genetic thing, but it is the case. Because aspirin thins your blood, and so it makes it easier, or not makes it easier, but it decreases the risk.
So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll do our last round with the panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. It's the 5th of October, 34 minutes past 10 o'clock. Two issues I want to get to before we have to say goodbye to our panelists this morning. And one is, of course, very much a part of our conversation, but certainly something that we can talk about in regards to what this means and where this leaves us when it comes to the track for seating Amy Coney Barrett. We believe that the timeline is going to stay pretty much as they expected. It was an ambitious timeline from the start, and it offered little room for error. This from the Washington Post, but that tightly crafted schedule has now been thrown into uncertainty with coronavirus diagnosis of at least two Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the fear that the other senators could test positive in the coming days. A handful of other GOP senators on and off the committee are also isolating as a precaution after being exposed to infected colleagues. Sensing an opportunity to delay, Democrats are cranking up their push to postpone the October 12th confirmation hearing, citing the safety of members, aides, and Barrett herself, waging a public pressure campaign because they have no powers on their own to stop their proceedings. Alan?
Yeah, well, you know, they had no chance of stopping it before. I still think that, you know, these guys, including Mitch McConnell and everybody else, are so intent on that 6-3 majority on the court that they're going to continue unabated. Nevertheless, I think this is a chance for Chuck Schumer to shine. This is a chance for him to get up and say, no, we're going to adhere to the rules. The same way Trump would say we have to adhere to the rules in this kind of situation, which is you got to be there to vote. Now, what do you think they're going to say when you say you got to bring two people who can infect everybody else into the same room with everybody else or be around? First of all, I don't think the American people will like it. A lot of these senators are going to be facing re-election themselves. So I say it's a shot. Do I think it's a shot that will work? That they'll have enough votes to, you know, to bring people over, or enough people who won't vote as a result? I doubt it. I think they'll probably have their way. Nevertheless, it certainly isn't where we were 2 weeks ago.
Do you know how, Alan, we often get listeners who say that, you know, they heard something and then they don't understand it and we never report on it? And you know, okay, so I'm going to be one of those listeners now. So my question is, has anyone heard about Mitch McConnell getting tested? This has been fascinating me for the last 4 days. So according to Newsweek, he was asked on Saturday and he said, yes. He said, have I ever been tested? Yes. I'm not going to answer questions about when. We are following the guidelines we've been given by the CDC. That's what he said on Saturday. But
We do know he has a couple of pre-existing conditions. Number one, he's old, right?
Yes.
Number two, he's
scared
mean.
Where you're going. He's mean.
He's
yes.
mean. Yeah.
But I do find it fascinating that a lot of people have been talking about the vice president, have been talking about Joe Biden, which all makes sense. I understand that. But the other huge player in this is Mitch McConnell, and it just seems odd to me that you wouldn't just say, okay, I got tested, I'm fine, I have tested negative over the last whatever.
Joe, he doesn't play by the same rules everybody
I know.
Plays with.
I know.
It's a word we used to use a lot. We don't hear it anymore. He's stern. He's very stern. I'll tell you something. I've thought about this a lot. I think if it means getting a 6-3 majority on that Supreme Court, even if it means he's going to get beat in Kentucky of all places, he'll gladly do it. I really think that will be his gift, as he sees it, to his posterity.
So this is back to your nuclear war question.
Yeah, what about it?
Well, no, meaning, right, that come hell or high water, you're going to do it.
That's what he wants.
Yeah.
He knows that the Democrats may take both houses of Congress, may take the Senate, by the way. Very good chance of doing that now. You know, all the polls are pointing to it. Although the race in Maine seems to be quickening a little bit. I'm not sure why that is happening.
Well, and what the hell happened in North Carolina? Dear God.
Yeah, what did happen?
I'm sorry. So the race in North Carolina, there has been an incumbent Republican. There was a, and the Democrat was ahead, I believe. Libby, help me out, by 10 points or something like that. So then over the weekend, it was revealed that the Democrat had a sexting scandal with a quote-unquote aide. He has come out and said that, you know, he has brought shame to his family and so forth. But he was up really, really high in the polls, thinking that he could. But it has upended that race pretty.
Unlike anything pretty quickly. Trump has ever done.
Well, yes, but as you often say, Alan, two wrongs don't make a right, and it does. You can see where people would be concerned, but it would be an issue.
Yeah, but, you know, there are other races to look at. We've got Joni Ernst, who is a great Trump, you know, crony. She's 12 points behind.
Yeah.
So, and then that's in Iowa. So we could very well flip that seat. Jamie Harrison and Miss Lindsay are neck and neck. I mean, there are a number of things.
Do you think he has a shot?
I think he might have a shot.
He's very impressive. I heard him. I heard him talking. He's very impressive.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, it's Deep South, and he's a man of color. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's all according to what they're going to do to, you know, suppress the vote.
And the polls are absolutely equal. So
he could win. And yes, I mean, you know, you're looking at this North Carolina Tillis versus Cunningham. And
right.
I never thought Tillis was going anywhere until I started seeing these, and I was like really sort of surprised. But I don't know if that was one they really banked on within the Senate Democratic Campaign Committee. But I'm shocked at the Ernst versus Greenfield in Iowa. That's really that to me. That's more of a bellwether of where the middle of the country is going, rather than anything down south.
Well, you know, Libby, this could be one of those what they call a realigning election.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be.
In other words, if the president, if people stay home. Because they are mad at the president. If Republicans or independents who would have voted for him ordinarily stay home, they won't be there to vote down line.
Right.
In other words, so that's why it's so dangerous for so many of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they have no place to go. They just don't. If they vote, if they come out against Trump, they're losers. People won't vote for him. They love this guy. And if they do.
Right.
Has anybody ever heard of doing the right thing? Period.
I mean, you know, you've got Mark Kelly beating the pants off of Martha McSally in Arizona, and I think that's a definite. And I think the Senate is going to go Democratic, and I think we're going to take the presidency and start to straighten everything back out. Now, the problem is whether or not there'll be armed insurrection, because we know that some of these yahoos, you know, whatever that was he told the Proud Boys.
Stay tuned.
I mean, you know, that's a dog whistle, and I wouldn't be surprised if in some parts of this country we started seeing all the sovereign citizens, you know, hunkering down with their guns and doing a little bit of armed insurrection.
I would be surprised. I would be surprised. But then again, call me a Shmuel.
Actually, how about a Shmageggy? I'd rather call you a Shmageggy.
Okay, I'll take it.
Okay, fine.
And we're back to this. Good. I like this. All right. let's see. We are expected. The latest from the White House is that the president will be meeting with his doctors, and a decision will be made later today as to whether he will be discharged or not. So still more on that of
Would you like to be a fly? Would you like to be a fly in the room, Joe, mm-hmm. as that discussion is going on? Because we know who's going to call that shot. It's going to be the president making that decision. Now, what will the doctors do? The doctors do whatever the hell he tells them to. And we have seen his own personal physician basically disgrace himself, you know, by either lying by omission or just flat downright lying to the press. And let me say, people really ought to know that it's so important that we know what a president is going through and what his physical condition is or her physical condition is. It's crazy.
And we don't have a great history on that in this country, do we, of presidents telling us the truth about their medical histories?
Well, no.
I mean, again, it doesn't make it right. I agree with you entirely, but the history isn't good.
No, it isn't. Well, we didn't know about FDR. We certainly didn't know about Addison and Jack Kennedy and what he was up against and his bad back and whatever else he was doing.
Susan writes, I agree with Sarah about going high. I was asking some friends about how we can deal with Trump supporters in a respectful way while not agreeing with them. Someone asked, what is the virtue in being respectful to them? My response, to hang on to my own soul. I do it for my own self-respect. Thank you, says Susan. You want to respond to that, Sarah? Yeah, love it. Okay, good.
I just love it. I mean, I think that's what we need to do to carry forward and to avoid the type of violence that we're concerned about happening in the future, is to really come together and do what we can to reach out to people and change minds. I've done it. It can be done.
We also, there was a story that I was trying to find of the Washington Post reporting about concern from the DOJ about election violence, but I don't have that at my fingertips, so I will move on. But we did get this letter from Elizabeth saying, please stop saying that Trump is going to lose. Please stop saying that Biden is up by X amount of points. I think it's dangerous. This was said 4 years ago and he won. I'm worried the voters will become complacent and not vote for Biden. This is a real chance that he could win again. I'm terrified that he will again win.
I'd like to respond, no. I'm not going to stop saying it. Let me tell you something about the American people. They love winners. They love the bandwagon. It's been proven time and time again. Mm-hmm. If they think their candidate or a candidate is ahead, they're more likely to vote for him than not. They're not staying home.
Right. And everybody knows how absolutely crucial this vote is.
I just want to go to the polls. Libby mentioned this earlier about the Siena survey. This is the New York Times Siena poll. Biden is ahead by 7 points in Pennsylvania, 5 points in Florida. And the thing that kept, while there wasn't a huge change of the people who were polled, said that they were they felt that Trump's debate behavior was deplorable. Which is interesting. And so these, of course, were taken either right before or just at the very beginning of when the president was diagnosed with COVID-19. So they don't tell us much about that aspect of it. But We're out of time, folks, so we're going to have to go. No. Yeah, sorry. But I thank you all for being with us. Alan, always a pleasure. Thank you very much, sir.
We love you, Joe. Thank you.
Love you. Jennifer Burns, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, thank you very much. We will be back with the Congressional Corner.